The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. We have two very different segments on this episode of the program. In just a few minutes, you're going to hear my conversation with Queen Noor of the Perkins Center for the Arts. We're going to be talking about Tastefully South Jersey. It's an exhibition and workshop series, which is an exploration into folk art and culture through the lens of food traditions. But first, a conversation with my guest, Dr. Lois Oppenheim, about a brand new film, a documentary about mental illness, entitled Daniel, Deborah, Leslie, and You. No one wants to think that their brain is not operating properly. I'm paraphrasing there, but those are the words, basically, of one of the experts who's interviewed in a documentary film which is very soon to be hitting the theaters. It's in post-production right now. It's entitled Daniel, Deborah, Leslie, and You. And You has a question mark after it, and we're going to get into that in just a couple of seconds. My guest is Dr. Lois Oppenheim. She's professor and chair of the Department of Modern Languages and Literatures at Montclair State University in New Jersey and co-creator of this film. Lois, thank you very much for taking the time to be on Humanities Connection.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The title grabbed my attention. Actually, it scared me. Why is And You question mark in the title? I'm going to tell you my interpretation is that the audience members are being asked to be open to the possibility that we could be dealing with mental illness ourselves. Is that the case, or are you simply looking to have people have empathy for the people in the film?
Well, that's a complicated question. We are certainly hoping that people will empathize with the people in the film, but that is not directly related to the title. It's not so much a question of does one have a mental illness, might you have a mental illness, because I don't even know what mental illness per se is. We all have periods, I think, of emotional unwellness, and there's a lot of controversy around a number of labels that are used in the mental health field, schizophrenia being one of them. Is that a term that should be used any longer? There's a cohort of people that feels it should not be. But we focus in this film on a number of people with severe conditions intermittently, not necessarily constantly, although some of them are more constant than others. And the you question mark means, do you have, you know, do you yourself have times when you're not okay, and how serious is that, and what can you do about it, and what really the focus of the film is the notion of recovery. What does recovery mean to different people in different societies, different cultures? What does it mean to get better and feel better? So that's really what the question mark is about.
But it is for us to some degree, not necessarily to frighten us that we could be dealing with a psychiatric disorder, but if we are not feeling 100% or we have some questions that there is, number one, the fact that we're not alone, and number two, ways to get help. So it is not just something that we're watching from a detached third-person perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a question of being able to relate to other forms of human experience. It's really about human experience, and I'll tell you two things. The first one is that the title used to be, the original working title was Daniel, Deborah, Leslie, and Maybe, and then there was another person's name, which there's no reason to get into now, but that person, it was a Maybe X, for we'll say for simplicity purposes here. X was tricky. To say Maybe X, the Maybe meant, was this person going to do well enough throughout the filming of the film to function in a way that was appropriate for the making of a film, and did we want that person at the end of the film to feel, I mean, how did we want him to feel at the end. We didn't want him to, certainly didn't want him to feel in any way threatened by the fact that he had exposed what were extreme mental states. And it got to the point where he did stop functioning and was not able to participate any longer in the film because of that.
That's one of the dangers in documentary filmmaking. You
yes.
can follow a script. You can say, as they say in the film industry, we're going to make the day because you have a script and you can do 5 pages today, 10 pages tomorrow, whatever. And you are following something and someone or a group of people or an issue which may go one way, may go the other.
Absolutely.
And you could be years in this process. Let me ask you about the three people you did actually choose.
Okay.
Daniel, Deborah, and Leslie. We don't need to go into too much detail about their individual situations, but obviously you were talking about the other person exposing some very personal things. Talk a little bit about the choice of these particular people who are actually in the title.
Okay, well, let me just say one other thing about the person who was exposing some very personal things, as you put it. It wasn't so much that he was exposing them by telling them or relating them in some other way. It was what we saw his behavior to be. And that is somewhat different from Daniel, Deborah, and Leslie. Daniel is a recent college graduate. His name is Daniel Lateman. He is an extraordinary human being. There's no other way to put it. He graduated from Purchase College about a year ago, and he has developed an incredible career for himself as a comedian. He is somebody who has been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and since the ages preteen, and he hears voices constantly, I mean every day, except when he's on the stage being funny. When he's in a comedy club, he does not hear voices. Why? That's a question of great interest to us and to him as well. And I mention his full name because he is totally out there wanting the world to know what he has lived through, what has been done about it, and he's doing so well. He's interesting also because his father, who is a physician, takes a very distinct perspective on mental disorders and sees them from a very biological perspective and treats medically, with psychopharmaceutical approach.
And that is something, Lois, that we in the lay community really need to understand about this, because so often we talk about what was in someone's childhood or, you know, the Freudian approach or talk therapy or this was in your developmental stage. Sometimes it's simply biochemical and it's synapses in the brain. That's got to be tough for any mental health professional to properly treat and diagnose because of the fact that it can be some sort of mix of those two factors, and it's hard to really pin down.
Well, I think that the biological perspective is the one that's accepted most commonly today, and that it is a central nervous system, brain disorder, et cetera. And Daniel's experience of treatment has been exactly that. Deborah Lampshire has had an entirely different background, an entirely different experience. She spent 18 years in a quote-unquote mental institution in New Zealand, and she rejected, when she got out because the institution ran out of funds, not because she was well, she has a moment that she relates in the film that is extremely moving, and I will not spoil the film.
No spoilers.
But what got her to the point of being able to say, I can do this for myself, and I can make myself better. And she is not somebody who accepts the biological explanation, and she has a very different point of view of treatment, of the meaning of recovery, etc. And she is a practitioner. She's a mental health, an award-winning mental health practitioner in New Zealand. And she is a fascinating individual. The other person is Leslie Nelson, who is a peer advocate. She worked for several years in New York City. She now works in Vermont. She, too, is a most extraordinary, high-functioning individual who has had periods of severe illness and who has checked herself into hospitals repeatedly when she feels she's becoming unwell. And she works through it for a few days, whatever, and then she's okay. And she sort of, I guess, represents a mix of the two perspectives, of a psychosocial and a biological perspective on mental unhealth, or illness is a word I try to avoid. But
well, you know, in the New Jersey Council for the Humanities releases, the press releases concerning these grants, and of course that is the connection here on our program for NJCH, is that they did fund some of this project. They call it a 90-minute documentary on the meaning of recovery from severe psychiatric disorders. So maybe that's a term you might feel more comfortable with, but for most of us in the lay community, we still probably, maybe we'll get rid of the use of the term, but mental illness is the term, at
well,
least for
we
now,
we are talking
I guess.
In this film about psychosis. Mm-hmm. And what I guess is the most unusual, most unique aspect of the film is that we are interested in human experience of these disorders, and we get to that by having the three people, Daniel, Deborah, and Leslie, talk to each other. And the film is almost entirely conversations between people, between the three of them, and they're talking to some other people. It is not so much following them around, or it's not your typical documentary in that sense. It is really listening to what they say to each other about their experience. And you mentioned the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, and I must say that they were very supportive, gave us a very generous grant that supported the various aspects of production. Alice Mayer and I do not ever get paid for any of our work, and this funding went not to any of the participants in the film, but for the editing, the writing of the music, the production ends of it, and to our fantastic filmmaker, Benjamin Wolf, who has done a number of documentaries and is also an instructor of film editing at Montclair State University, which is where I first met him.
We are almost out of time, believe it or not, in this segment. So I want to get a little bit more pragmatic here. And it's been absolutely fascinating. And you were kind enough to send me the trailer. I've seen this. But we know you're in post-production, which can be nerve-wracking. The initial broadcast of this show and this interview will be in October, but we do repeat the program, and then it is also archived at njhumanities.org. So, for those listening in October 2018 to the initial broadcast, when and where might they be able to see Daniel, Deborah, Leslie, and you?
Well, we're just submitting the film to various festivals. There is a website called How to Touch a Hot Stove, called The Hot Stove Project. Our first film was How to Touch a Hot Stove, and that can be seen on the website. And we have another film called Crazy that's up there also. They'll see anyone that goes to the website, which is, again, thehotstoveproject.org, will see exactly where it's going to be screened and when, and they will note that John Turturro is our spokesperson. He's been very supportive of our efforts, and anyone can learn much more about the progress of our entire project by going to that website.
It's very interesting that you're a professor of modern language, and we have only about 30 seconds in which you can explain this life choice, but your involvement... your involvement in psychological and mental health issues. Just quickly, how do you cross those two academic disciplines? How did that come to be?
It really began because of all my writing on literary criticism, my writing in literary criticism, which was very psychoanalytically oriented, and I trained at the New York Psychoanalytic Institute, where I'm still very active, and I've worked as a visiting scholar at the Psychiatric Institute, a New York State institute affiliated with Columbia, and that's been a second great interest of mine, and I've written a lot on creativity, consciousness studies, etc., and filmmaking. Just it became a natural way for me to get a message out against stigma and about possibilities for recovery, for understanding what we mean when we talk about mental disorders, et cetera. And Alice Mayer jumped on board very quickly with me wanting to go into this project of filmmaking, and so that's where we are.
Well, it is fascinating, and I really am confident, just even based on this conversation and the trailer, that it will help many people. Lois, thank you very much for being here on the program.
Thank you for having me.
The film is called Daniel, Deborah, Leslie, and You, and it will soon be available to be seen, and our guest has been Dr. Lois Oppenheim. You're listening to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. This program is broadcast on 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. And you can go to that website to find out about all of the interesting things which are done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, as well as hearing archives of Humanities Connection. The exhibition and workshop series called Tastefully South Jersey is described as an exploration into folk art and culture through the lens of food traditions. And here to talk about this is Queen Noor, folklife director of the Perkins Center for the Arts, and NJCH, the council which underwrites this program, has given a grant to Tastefully South Jersey. Queen Noor, thank you very much for taking the time to be on with us.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, Bob. Absolute pleasure.
Let's talk a little bit about what folk life is. People throw the term around. We talk about folk music. What exactly is folk life?
So folk life really is talking and studying and sharing the dailiness of our lives, the dailiness of our culture. It's about the folk. It's about the people. And that's what folk life is. So if that's the bigger umbrella underneath it, you would have folk arts and folk music. And you do documentation, oral histories. So it's really, it's the study of people. It's the study of folk and their ways. And it includes food traditions, of course.
And food really means so much more than just basic nutrition to people. So much can be revealed through food. So this is going to focus on three South Jersey counties, Burlington, Gloucester, and Camden counties. What exactly will be done or is being done in Tastefully South Jersey to let this food tell a much bigger story?
Well, we began about 2 years ago, and NJCH actually funded the research for the Tastefully South Jersey project. So in that research, we went out and we did field work. And in that field work, we went to the homes of people from different cultures who are food artisans who carry on the traditions. They may carry on their traditions through foodways, through some of them were restaurant owners and entrepreneurs. Some of them just were people who passed it down within their families. And they wanted to share those traditions with other people. And so when we did the interviews and we went out into the field, we discovered West African foods, Liberia and Ghana. So we had Nana Kito from Ghana, and we had the Ziplis, who actually have a restaurant in Willingboro, New Jersey, in Burlington County, from Liberia. We had as well the Caribbean food. We had Caribbean foods, and people that we Shermer Joyce is somebody that we interviewed. We interviewed from Poland, Anna Felsen, who's a person who keeps the tradition in her home. And if you walk into her kitchen right away, you'll see on her refrigerator a tag that says, that lets you know that you are in a Polish kitchen. We also interviewed Ilvia Asal, who did Turkish, as well as Sharife Ayakta, who also did Turkish food. One of them did it within their home and passes on the culture, and the other one was a restaurateur. We did African American with Corinne's in Camden County.
So you did all this research, and obviously I'm certain you were familiar with some of these traditions, but you probably came across things you had never experienced before. You mentioned the term, though, Queen, food artisans. You're not just talking about a chef here, right? What is a food artisan?
So a food artisan is one who looks and treats the way that they pass on their tradition in a very artistic way. So when I say artistic way, it's from the heart and from the soul. And that's what I really got from the interviews, how vested they were in their culture through food. And so with the art of food, and they're very meticulous and careful about how they prepare food. For instance, when we had the Taste of Mexico and Peru, and we had, We end up having, if you look at, like, the way that you make a tortilla, Elizabeth, she shows you just how to pinch it, just the correct way. And you're absolutely correct about in all the traditions, I learned something new. I'm African American. Even within the African American tradition, I learned something new.
Well, let me ask you about that. In your own tradition, what is something that you learned as a result of Tastefully South Jersey that you didn't already know? Because obviously, if you're talking about Turkish or Polish or Caribbean, maybe you don't know that, and it's all new or mostly new. What about your own tradition? What did you find out?
Well, one of the things I found out from Corinne was that she actually has a restaurant in Camden, and she comes from Camden, but she cooks Southern food and Southern style food. So we were featuring food ways of the South, and she said that people always query her and ask her, so where's your roots? Where are you from? And she says, yeah, we know you're from the South. And she says, yes, I'm from South Camden. Right? And so one of the things that she said, it's really, and all of them talked about the flavor of their food and what makes their food very different, how they flavor it. So, and the spices that are used are different as well. How Corinne particularly, and then we also had Jonathan Jernigan, who also actually gave back to the community. So Corinne brings in teenage students and teaches them the etiquette of cooking, the etiquette of running a business. And she starts them out there. And then they'll graduate into learning how to cook. So it's a way of to give back as well. So those are, you know, different things that, you know, I actually learned in terms of my own culture, and learning another thing that Corinne said is that a lot of times people think just because you're from the South you can't cook, or just because you're African, or you can cook, or just because you're African American you can cook. But she mentioned how she had a friend at a job up here once who said she could make candy sweet potatoes just like her, and she was Caucasian.
You know, what's interesting, though, Queen, is what Corinne said, her joke about being from South Camden. But clearly, it just talks about her roots going all the way back to the South and her family, and then the Great Migration, which would have taken Southern African Americans to the North. All of that is a connection that goes well beyond food, too. That idea that these teenagers who are being exposed to this are now going to, even just as a sidebar, learn an awful lot about the experience of all the people who came before them.
Yes. Well, they learn about it, but actually from Corinne's perspective, right, in the from their hometown, from their home base,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful thing as well. She makes sure that they know about business, they know about how to treat customers, how to do customer service. And so, but she does it from a lens right from here. In terms of the culture and food, yes, it's connected to, you know, what are the most popular African-American dishes. And those dishes do deeply come from the South, and she might have a little bit of what she considers an original twist on it, or original ingredient in it. So part, like you said before, it's not just the food. It's food ways. So when we talk about food ways, is how does food connect us? How does the food work with our morals and our values? How does food work with family? And that's what I'm talking about. You know, what it means to family. What does the culture mean to family? And so, you know, what does it mean to sit around a table and talk and discuss? What does it mean to have rituals around food? And it involves all of that in terms of the food ways and folk life. And that's some of the things that were revealed through each of the cultures and the preciousness of it and the value of it to each of the artisans and the excitement that they had when they were sharing it. So what we ended up doing was, after we did the study, we held a special event called, you know, Tastefully South Jersey Exhibition. And at the exhibition, we also had fine artist paintings up. We had artifacts that were collected that related to the different cultures. And we had the taste of West African and African American soul. We had the taste of Poland and Turkey. These were special events. The taste of Mexico and Peru. The taste of the Caribbean. And we also had Becoming American. It's not a melting pot, it's potluck, where we provided the food coming from some of the artisans and some of the different cultures, and people were invited to the table to talk, because we believe that everybody should have a seat at the table. And let's talk about immigration. Let's talk about cultures. And it moved us into a program that we're doing right now currently called Becoming American, which was funded by City Lore and JCH, as well as the NEA. And the NEA also funded the whole Tastefully South Jersey project.
Listen, I just have to mention one of the things, sure, Queen, because we're running out of time, and I want to get to something you mentioned to me off the air.
Sure.
And I'd like to kind of wrap up the segment with this. You mentioned that Tastefully South Jersey and the entire study of food and food artisans, yes, it tells us about our differences, but it also tells us about our sameness as human beings. And I'd like you to wrap up with that thought, because I think it's something that would be great if you could share with the entire audience.
Oh, sure. So as we had hundreds of people come to the different events, and we always had discussions. We always had presentations and discussions. And people actually were fascinated by, we did evaluations, and they were fascinated by what they learned. And when we asked people, what is the main idea? Most often we got the main idea was to appreciate differences and to see how we are the same, how food and culture is what it means to, you know, each of us, and what it means to families, that we all have families. We all like to taste. We all like to smell. We all like to indulge in the five senses. And through those five senses, we can look at each other in our eyes. We can start to talk and break some barriers across talking about our food ways, talking about our food and the things that we love from our culture. And we're continuing that series with a set of workshops that we're also presenting for the fall and the winter as well on our food ways.
Well, the Perkins Center for the Arts is something that everyone should really check out on the internet and find out more about what's going on. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Queen Noor, who is the Folk Life Director of the Perkins Center for the Arts, talking about Tastefully South Jersey. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you very much for listening. This program is initially broadcast on WFDU 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. You can go to that website not only to hear archives of our program, but to hear about all of the fascinating programs that are being run throughout the state by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.